Hello.
Hello, Soraya. This is Jeff. How's it going?
All right.
So I think today is going to be our first international call, right?
Have we not had one before?
I don't think we have.
Well, this is as good a guess as ever to be our first international call.
Yeah. Well, unless you consider like New York International.
I don't.
All right. Well, you want to tell our listeners who we got today?
We have got the one and only Chris Kakavas. Green on Red. And so many other things. I mean, Jeff and I were just talking about how long his artistic resume is. And I mean, if we just started rattling off the names, we'd be here for well over an hour and we wouldn't even get to talk to him. So yeah. Let's jump into the call.
Let's do it.
Calling Germany.
Hi, this is Soraya.
And this is Jeff.
Our podcast is called Paisley Stage Raspberry and Rhyme.
A podcast where the two of us play music that we like and share anecdotes and background about the tunes.
We hope you'll join our conversation. And without further ado, agrubiar.
Let's get groovy. So before we call him, how good is your German?
Not good.
Not good. All right, well, let's give him a call in English.
It sounds good.
Well, hello.
Hello, Christopher.
Hello, can you guys see me?
Not yet.
Here we go. I think I got it. Uh-oh, there I am.
Migates, Chris. Migates.
Migates gut, danke. Migates euch.
I think you're asking how am I. They're good, and that's about it.
Hey, pretty good, pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, Soraya's...
Soraya's nice to meet you guys.
Yes, it's nice to see you face to face.
Nice Hi. To meet you. I just bring the water.
That's my wife, Rose.
Hi, yeah. Rose.
Very that's nice to Esprit meet you.
And Soraya.
And I just heard you speaking German. Very well.
Very terrible German, but yes.
I understood it even in the kitchen. Well done.
Thank you.
Okay.
So nice to meet you. Thank you.
All right.
Enjoy. Ciao.
Ciao.
Cool. See,
German, Italian. Let's throw in some Spanish, Jeff, and then I'll throw in some Valley speak, and then we're done.
All right. Good, good.
All right.
Well...
Maybe we'll hit a little English in between.
I hope so, because that's the only English that I know. I mean, the only language that I can speak at all, and obviously not so well. So.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, come on. Hey, now.
So on today's show, we're thrilled to have the guy that Steve Wynn told us is the dead center of the Paisley Underground scene. That's how Steve Wynn describes our guest today. But I first learned about Chris Kakavas in the early 80s, reading through the credits on my bed in Southern California, reading through the credits of Green on Red albums. But Chris has played with a number of artists that we've already had on our show, including Dream Syndicate, Steve Wynn, Viva Saturn, Russ Tolman, Pat Thomas, Tom Stevens. Soraya and I were talking that the list of credits is so long that just coming up with questions, we were like, okay, we're going to have to cut that out. We're going to have to cut that out. There's so much stuff. But with and without his band, Junkyard Love, Chris has released about a dozen albums of his own material, and we're hoping to dig into those today and find out what inspires Chris. So, Chris, welcome to Paisley Stage, Raspberry and Rhyme.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I got this for you. So you're kind of like a baseball player coming onto the field, so we had to have some introduction music. So.
Yeah, you need walk-up music.
Oh my God, you just gave me an idea. I think that's going to be my walk-on. Like, I don't care whichever band I play with, I'm going to make that mandatory, but that'll be my walk-on song. And it'll probably clear the room for the most part.
Well, it had us dancing.
Yeah.
Nice, nice.
See, yeah. Jeff, would you ever think Chris Kakavas and the Ritchie family, I feel disco good. You know, the connection doesn't seem that evident.
It's not obvious.
No, it's a little, I mean, if I look to the left of me, let's see what I got here. Most of my records are in the other room, but we got some Cool in the Gang, okay, for starters.
Nice.
I don't know why. I got Commodores.
I've got that one.
This might make a little more sense.
Oh, yes. Oh.
That's Kevin Ayers, John Cale, Eno Nico. And, of course, this is one of my all-time favorites.
Oh, is that Eno?
Yeah, Taking Tiger Mountain. Oh, my God, if you don't know that record, you got to know it. It's amazing. And then I have, of course, Nancy and Lee.
Of course. Nice.
And this one, unfortunately, I took it to a party to DJ, and all I have is the cover. I don't have the record anymore. Really impressed. I gotta replace that.
Right. Oh my gosh! And if I was reading correctly, it's got his version of Get Back on it, which is really good.
Yeah, it is, or it was. Yeah, I'll find it again.
Well, Chris, we want to start out with just a few Green on Red questions, if you'll indulge us, before we move on to Junkyard Love and some questions we have about your solo work. Green on Red was formed first as the Surfers in Tucson in 1979, and then shortly thereafter, there's a move to Los Angeles. And we wanted to ask you what prompted that move to Los Angeles, and how did all of you from Green on Red kind of hook up and get involved with the other Paisley Underground bands? Like the Dream Syndicate and the Long Riders.
Yeah. That's it sounds almost like an innocent question, or it is obviously an innocent question, but it's funny because the reason we moved to LA is pretty funny. So we were surfers without the, we were surfers, S-E-R-F-E-R-S. And we'd been living together in Tucson. We had this house, and we were living pretty rock and roll lifestyle. I slept in the basement, which is also where we rehearsed. And it was damp even by Tucson standards, or considering it was Tucson, it was damp, which was odd. Okay. And Dan's girlfriend was living there intermittently, or I can't remember exactly. I think she might have had her own place, but she's also there. And eventually, Dan's girlfriend decided to move to Los Angeles because she wanted to go to Otis Parsons Art School.
Oh.
Yeah. Very shortly thereafter, Dan said, you know what? Well, my girlfriend went to L.A., so I'm going to L.A. If you guys want to keep making music with me, you got to move to L.A. Simple as that.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So I was 18. Jack was a bit older. And Ben Christian maybe was also about 18 or 19. We were pretty young. And honestly, I didn't give it much thought. It was clear to me that I was going to move to Los Angeles. So once Dan got there, he started looking for a place for us to live. And he found us an apartment directly in Hollywood, Fountain and Vine. And it was pretty sleazy. And we were pretty broke. We didn't really have much of anything. So we somehow got into this apartment. It was one room. So me, Van the drummer, who went on to start Naked Prey, and Jack Watterson, we moved into this apartment. There was one room, big room, where we all slept, a bathroom, and then a kitchen, but a huge kitchen. I like that kitchen. But it was pretty rough times, none of us had a job at that point. None of us really had money. So, we resorted to some pretty, we had some questionable survival tactics. Let me put it like that. I think it's probably already public knowledge somewhere, but, we'd go to the 24-hour markets at midnight and literally steal food to eat because we didn't have anything else, I mean, it was, like I say, early on, and we'd maybe scrounged together some money, and after we'd gotten all the food, we'd go over to the liquor counter, and we'd buy a 40 of Colt 45. Nice. And yeah, Soraya, the good stuff. And it was a kind of rough but beautiful time. I really liked it. It was exciting. It was adventurous, and it was a little bit scary because, you know, you didn't really know what was going to happen next.
Wow, you know? Wow, sounds like a good start, and it's kind of a tie into a question that I had with Green on Red eating, and a couple of things that have come up when we've been doing our shows with other members from the Paisley Underground are different bonding experiences that all these community of bands have. And one of the experiences was a trip to Catalina Island that we've learned more about. But something that's come up that we haven't had any eyewitnesses to were what's known as the Green on Red barbecues. So I'm hoping that you will be our first person that can tell us a little bit more about Green on Red barbecues. Is this stolen food from the market that you guys threw on a grill, or
do you know? No, that must have been that was after we were became upstanding citizens, and after we had jobs and we could actually afford to buy, you know, the good stuff, and yeah, that took place. I think where that probably first started happening was at the Clinton House, the house on Clinton Street. And it was kind of an apartment complex. And in that apartment complex lived members of 45 Graves. Oh. So including Don Bowles, the drummer, Dinah Cancer, I can't remember her real name, the singer from 45 Grave, they were also there. And I think there might have been, I can't remember who else was there from the music scene. But that's where that went down. And to be honest, I couldn't tell you a whole lot more. But it was, yeah, just, you know, people getting together and grilling up and drinking probably too much beer.
Sounds like a good time.
Definitely.
So I just want to go back a little bit. So the transition to LA,
then, right?
And then where's the name change between Surfers and then, yeah, Green on Red, and then kind of connecting with all these different bands? Because I knew about the Clinton House, the Clinton House, but I didn't know that members of 45 Grave. So now that's kind of expanding my vision of
Okay. Yeah. Well, when we got there, did we have a manager? I think we had kind of a manager guy, and he liked our music, but it was clear that if we were called Surfers, it would cause some confusion, because it was also at the time there was sort of a surf punk scene coming up, you know. Of course, that was further south in Orange County, but the guy was concerned. He thought we should just change our name. So we were, you know, throwing ideas back and forth, and I forget, somebody suggested the Krells, K-R-A-L-L-S, or the Krells or something like that. It's from a movie. I think it was the name of some science fiction monsters or something like that. I obviously can't remember specifically. And, yeah, that didn't really fit. Shortly before we left Tucson, we did a radio show, a live radio show. And one of the songs we played at that time was called Green on Red. So for some reason, I think Dan just threw that out there. He's like, "Hey, you know what? Why don't we call ourselves Green on Red?" I know I wasn't crazy about the idea. I can't remember what the other members thought at the time, but I was like, "Man, that's a freaking weird name, you know, Green on Red. What the hell? What does that even mean? You know?" But eventually we decided, okay, yeah, we're green on red. Boom, done. And the rest is history.
Okay. So nice. green on red, newly with their new moniker.
Yeah.
So, after releasing your first EP, Two Bibles, in 1981, Green on Red releases a self-titled mini LP on Steve Wynn's Down There label.
Right.
You had a couple of co-writes on the record, including Illustrated Crawling. And with the connection with Steve Wynn and his label, it sounds like it was a bit more of a tight-knit community working together with a love for each other's music. Is this the case, or are we making the image a lot prettier than what it was?
No, that's very close to what it was. I think certain bands maybe had closer alliances, you know, and it fluctuated. You know, sometimes these bands were doing more shows together, or they were a little closer, it seemed. But all in all, these bands were going to see each other's bands. And I think that's where that came from. You know, there was a kind of solidarity. And I don't think anybody thought at the time we're creating a scene. It was a very organic process that people just liked to like these bands. You know, everybody just happened to like what the other band was doing. And it was a really, it was a cool thing. You know, we loved live music. We loved the clubs that were happening at the time. Grandia Room, Cathay de Grand, Raji's, of course. Those were kind of the core. Those were like the Hollywood clubs, you know. And then you get a little further west, you go to Music Machine. Where else? So then, of course, you have like, then you got the Hollywood Strip, where we didn't really get into the Whiskey or the rock scene. Did we ever play the Whiskey or rock? I can't remember. You'd have to ask an archivist. But, you know, mostly these kind of punk clubs in Hollywood, that's where we spent the most of our time. And yeah, and somehow it was these bands that were always playing, and we were always going to see them, and it was a lot of fun. And of course, through that process, friendships develop, and people make offers, you know, like Steve Wynn offering to release our first EP or first record. Yeah.
I love that.
That was really cool. It was just a happy coincidence. At least that's how I remember it.
I love all these connections and the community. It's what makes it, part of what makes it special for me. My first introduction to Green on Red was actually Gravity Talks, which is one of my all-time favorite albums. And it starts off with the title track, and you've got this great keyboard lick on there that you play. You're a guitar player as well as a keyboard player, but on this, you're playing amazing sounding. I love your lick on that. Read comparisons to The Doors' Ray Manzarek. I don't know if that's a lazy comparison, or was he actually an influence on your keyboard playing or sound?
Well, I was a huge Doors fan, and in fact, it was the first record I ever bought. I think I paid $2 at Montgomery Ward's for is absolutely live.
Wow.
So that's a hell of a good deal. And it was new. I think it might have been already in the cutout bin. No, definitely a huge Doors fan. But never really, you know, thought about the keyboards, you know. I just kind of took in the whole sound, as I did with most bands that I listened to. There are certain keyboard players that I remember that I aspire to play like them. Well, one was Jan Hammer.
Wow.
Jan Hammer, and then you hear Rick Wakeman, you're like, Jesus Christ, how does he do that, you know? So there was that kind of stuff, you know. I mean, ironically, the guys that probably inspired me the most as keyboard players were rather from the jazz and prog rock section, which was an earlier phase that I went through, of course, before all the punk stuff, etc. Right. In terms of the comparison, I think that was probably the easiest comparison, because I don't know, there weren't a lot of other bands where the keyboards kind of came to the forefront, at least not in the sort of rock and roll style. Or, I mean, that's my opinion.
Yeah, that's certainly valid. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the sound, not only the style of playing, but the sounds that you choose.
You might be right about that. What was I playing at the time? I think I had, in Tucson, I still had this old Fender Contempo organ, which sounded like more like a Farfisa, which is also what Ray Manzarek was playing. And eventually, well, I was playing a Casio on the Down There record. That's that keyboard that I have my hands stretched out on to play.
Oh, nice.
It's an old Casio. And actually, David Roback ended up buying that off of me. And he said he has it to this day. He loved that keyboard so much. He's like, I got to have that keyboard, you know. And when I met him a few years ago, I went to see Mazzy Star in Zurich when Keith Mitchell was still alive. May he rest in peace. Mm. David was still crazy about that keyboard. He's like, I still have it. He's like, I'm not giving that thing up, you know.
Wow.
So I thought that was pretty funny. Just to wrap this up, so then eventually my main keyboard for Green on Red was a Korg CX3 for all you gear freaks out there. And that's basically, it's a Hammond B3 replica. So it has one manual, not two manuals. They also made the BX3. That was the two manual keyboard. That's the one that I think Robert Lloyd has.
Ah.
You probably know that name. Yeah, yeah. And, but it emulated the B3 to some degree as well as it could for a keyboard from the 80s. And it had little drawbars on it. And that was my standard organ back in the day. Yeah.
Nice. That's one of the things that I love about your music is the sounds that you choose.
Thanks.
Yeah, they have great, like, organic sound. Like, you... For the most part, you stayed away from, like, the strings and all that. It's like organ, like more organic sounding. So another song from Gravity Talks was That's What You're Here For. So that was a song that you wrote and sang. And we were doing a little bit of research, and we found a video on YouTube of you and Steve singing it in 2013, I believe, where he throws it. You're not even prepared to do it. He requests it from the stage. So I recommend our listeners check that out. It's a cool little video of the two of them duetting on that great song.
Oh, dude, I don't know the freaking words.
You can
words.
Do it. Make it up on the spot, then.
All right. I wanted Chris to play this song the whole tour, and the tour's almost over. If you're a fan of Green on Red, as I am, you might know it from...
Go!
No kidding, right?
Yeah.
And this is a song Chris wrote for their, I guess, first album. What's your first album?
My first album, my solo album, I think was...
No, your first Green or Red album. Gravity Talks, the first album. I know.
Yeah, the first. I mean, you brought out the first record from us.
This is probably the most exciting conversation you'll hear all night long.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, this is a song Chris wrote and sang on that record that I've always loved, and I've been trying to get him to play for a long time, so we're going to do it tonight. It's called That's What You're Here For.
Y'all. One, two, three, four.
Give me a little bit.
you're here for. Hold to your heart. Gotta start living, don't tear yourself apart. Walking down a dusty road, kicking dirt and asking the sky, is life a world I'm living in, or just the answer to the reason why? That's what you're here for. Hold to your heart. Gotta start living, don't tear yourself apart.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
I freaked out. I love that.
The song starts off with your lyrics. You might find yourself alone, on your own without a home, and you can find yourself a friend, and you can keep him till the very end. That's what you're here for. Do you remember what prompted you to write these lyrics, by any chance?
Oh, geez.
It's like, 35 years ago?
Oh, in German we would say "Das ist eine große Herausforderung." That's a big that's a big challenge. I don't know. I mean, to this day I value friendships. But I've also realized throughout the years I'm actually not always the best friend. As much as I aspire to be a good friend, you know, with some people it's easy, with some people, with other friends, you know, requires maybe a little more effort, or maybe some people anticipate that you would be a little more present. And I've discovered that's actually a shortcoming, you know, with me, in certain cases. It's a little, I was disappointed in myself when I realized that, but I don't know. I think, you do the best you can, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But to go back to that moment that might've inspired that, I definitely couldn't bring up anything specific.
That's fine.
And that performance, you know, it's just the two of them. It's just Steve and Chris, and it's honestly just stripped down, bare basics. And the lyrics really stand out. But what stands out, you, Jeff and I were remarking, first of all, you're a great writer, great songwriter.
Thank you.
Your voice is really just so engaging, and it really draws me as a listener in. And I just appreciate it a lot. And
thank you so much.
When we start talking about Junkyard Love, I have some questions too. But anyway, yeah. This cool. is going to be our last green on red question for now. So, for The Killer Inside Me, produced by Jim Dickinson and recording at Arden Studios in Memphis, that's a really historic place to record. One, how does that happen? How do you guys get to Arden?
And then, well,
do you have any series stories you'd like to share about your experience recording there?
Well, you know, I have to make a small correction. Okay. It actually was not recorded in Arden. It was mixed in Arden, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Here's the thing. The bottom line is, I don't know what it says on the record, but I guarantee you I've never been to Arden Studios. And it's unfortunate. But it was indeed mixed there, but it was recorded in Hollywood at El Dorado, I believe. El Dorado Studios. But you might want to double check that. I think that's the name of the place. Jeez, I should maybe pull out the record myself.
Don't worry about it. We'll do
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Yeah, so no, unfortunately, I didn't get to go to Ardent. I've only been to Memphis a few times, but only to play, so in and out. Didn't experience much of Memphis, which is a pity. Maybe one of these days in the future I still can. Yeah.
It's a very interesting city.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, my God, I mean, the musical history alone is just mind-blowing, you know.
It's still incredible that the album was actually mixed at that studio. That's pretty cool.
I agree. And if I recall, so I believe it's Dan and Chuck who went out there with Jim to finish the record.
Nice.
And that's where they added the background singers and that kind of stuff. And I think maybe Chuck played his guitars there. I can't remember exactly how that went.
So maybe there was just a few overdubs.
There were definitely some overdubs, but most of the core recording was all done in Hollywood.
Got it.
Mea culpa.
Oh, yeah.
So, Junkyard Love. Like this band, at least at the beginning, starts off as what I consider a super group of some of these Paisley Underground bands. So Soraya, get this, from the first album, you've got John Thoman from Rain Parade, who played on all of the Junkyard Love records, right? And then you've got Mark Walton from Dream Syndicate and Continental Drifters, Tom Stevens from the Long Riders. We were watching a really cool video of a live show that you guys did in Reseda, I think, with that lineup. Really cool. And then the aforementioned Keith Mitchell, he played on some of your records. He was from Monitor, Opal, Mazzy Star, and the Romans, of course. And
exactly. Oh man, I'm so glad you mentioned the Romans. What a great and obscure band. What an amazing recording. I still love listening to that record. It's just great.
And then Robert Lloyd too, also from the Romans, right? He did some work with you. How did you get all these guys together, this super group, what I consider a super group? How did you get these guys to record with you?
You know, I think after Green on Red kind of broke up, I think they probably just felt sorry for me, you know? They're like, oh yeah, let's throw this guy a bone. Okay, all right. Yeah, we'll go, yeah, what the hell? You know, he needs to get out of his funk, you know, so. Now, you know, again, it's just these friendships had developed, and when I wanted to play these songs, I was looking around, and it was more, probably based more on who was available at that time, you know. I wasn't really out to put a band together, as I recall. I just kind of wanted to do some shows, maybe eventually do some recording. Maybe I was trying to put a band together, but yeah, that I don't remember that being my prime motivation. And eventually the members sort of fell into place. Throughout my life, I've done so much without a lot of intention, you know, which is probably has not been the best approach, you know, to doing things in my life, right? Just, you know, where things just happen in a sort of haphazard manner. You know, it worked out, whatever. I'm happy with the legacy and I'm happy with my achievements. And I hope in the future I'll be doing more too, but at the moment, in terms of my solo stuff, it's a little bit on the back burner, I gotta say.
Okay.
Yeah. Did I answer the question?
Yes.
I think.
But I'm not buying that they felt sorry for you. The songs are amazing, and they wanted to be a part of it. That's probably closer to the truth.
You know,
I'm being well, semi, partially ironic. No, they're good people, and they're all fantastic musicians. And honestly, however it happened, I mean, I'm damn lucky. You know, it could have been, I don't know who could have. Maybe I would have ended up playing it with like guys from hair bands. You know,
I think you guys have magic together.
Yeah, cool. I think so too. You're right. But again, you know, these players, it's like, you know, you can't really go wrong. It's the cream of the crop, you know?
Yeah. Exactly.
It was 14 hours before I left my bed this morning. Seems I lost everything I had, much without warning. More of a man than I would have found time for crying. But I was in a bar room, drowning my old friend's sorrow. I said, "Mister, can't you see? No wife, no family. Driving misery." I'm like a train without a track, I got nowhere to go. And even if I did, I'd probably get there real slow. I got holes in my shoes, and it's raining like hell. Now every thought is like a ringing bell. I said, "Mister, can't you see? No wife, no family. Driving misery." One of these days, I'm gonna get back home. Find you there alone. God, I hope so. Given the chance, I'll probably do it all again, like I did before. Having learned. There's a bus line leaving at 8:45. Runs a long route between here and nowhere. I'm trying to miss it, yeah, 'cause I've been there before. And if I make it on, make sure I get a seat by the window.
I just keep thinking, you know, that's no pity band. Those are a bunch of badasses.
Taking
it on the road. So I want to talk about the 1997 release, Anonymous.
So good.
Produced by Steve Wynn. How do you like working with Steve, especially with him with his producer hat on? How do you, you know, how's that? How is that working with Steve Wynn, someone you know as a friend, obviously, someone you've collaborated with, but now as a producer?
Yeah, my relationship with Steve Wynn, our relationship has been pretty rock solid throughout the years, as friends and as musical collaborators. I think we've just really built up a lot of trust in each other, and there's so much respect between us. And when we were in the studio, yeah, I mean, we just get each other, you know. I get him, he gets me, and we discuss things. And sometimes, even when we disagree, you know, it's all just completely with respect. And I just love working with that guy on every level. I love being his sideman. I love when he played a solo on you know, on my records. And then I loved him as a producer too, you know. And in that role, you're defaulting your decisions to him to some degree. But in the end, he just wants he's doing what's in the best interest of my music. So I don't really question his motives or opinions, unless they're completely, you know, out of line with mine. And, you know, if that's the case, we usually end up meeting somewhere in the middle, you know. He's easy to compromise with. But we are both the type of people that if we really believe in our opinion, we're very steadfast, you know. So if he can also give the hard no, you know.
I can picture that.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, all in all, like I say, it's a very the ebb and flow in our relationship, whether it's regarding our friendship or musical collaborations, it's just so easy, and it requires like no effort, and that's what I love about it.
Wow. It sounds very organic and like a great place for creative juices to flow, yeah. Right?
So absolutely, without a doubt. From both sides, without a doubt.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, Chris, I want to talk about Good Times, specifically the song, the title track off your sophomore 1992 release.
Judge. other than a sense of danger. There'll be no jury. A ruling in your favor. Just me for you. Engines revved, flying colors too. There will be good times. Drive you insane.
Not a keyboard guy, but I think it's I think it's a Wurlitzer, maybe. I don't know what that sound is of that organ, but whatever it is, I love that sound so much. And as I mentioned before, I love your choices and your sonic choices and what you pick specifically on organ or keyboard. Do you have a favorite keyboard or keyboard sound? And is that a Wurlitzer on that song? Do you remember?
You know, I'm pretty sure, I'm quite sure that is a Wurlitzer, yeah. And honestly, that is probably one of my favorite keyboards of all time. I love the Wurlitzer. To my left, I have my Korg set up to rehearse for the Dream Syndicate tour that's coming up. And that, yeah. And that keyboard, it's called, it's the Korg SV1. I think that's what it's called, yeah. SV stands for Stage Vintage. So it it has all the vintage sounds. So it has like a Wurlitzer, Rhodes, Hammond organ, clavinet. It has like a Mellotron sound.
Those are all the best.
I love the Wurlitzer on that thing. It's pretty damn close sonically to the original Wurlitzers. But when I listened to the latest Dream Syndicate, where I played a real Wurlitzer, I still hear the difference. You know, there's just no comparison. Try as they might, they haven't quite got it 100%, but it's pretty damn close. So, but yeah, I freaking love the Wurlitzer. There was back in the day, you could get them for like $60 in in the thrift shops.
Wow.
And, but now, you know, I mean, cause they're so old and rare, or, you know, everybody's bought them up and they love the sound too. I don't know what they're going for, but you probably couldn't get one for under $800, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
In good condition. Maybe even more, maybe 1,000.
I was going to say about 1,000 to 1,200 is what I usually see.
Well, there you have it. Yeah.
But that sound is so emotive. Like, just one chord on that Wurlitzer, it's just heartfelt to me. It just has that sound that's so emotive.
Yeah. No, I'm crazy about it. I mean, you hear it a lot on Neil Young's recordings too, you know, and, you know, I remember the first time I played one, I was just like, oh man, this is just such a fantastic instrument. And also it's a very organic instrument because you have an electric instrument, but it's actually a hammer hitting a tine, okay? So the tone is made by a tine, literally a piece of metal cut to a certain length to get that keep. It's crazy. So, and that's unfortunately, you know, so if you take those things on the road, they can be considered not roadworthy because these tines can break. And if those tines break and need to be resoldered and cut to the right length, I mean, I wouldn't even know where to begin.
Oh, geez.
So it's a very simple mechanical thing. And maybe that's why it does sound so great and organic.
I had no idea. That's
that's how it works. The sound is generated by a hammer hitting a tine.
Wow. It's a great sound.
Yeah. It's a glorious sound. It's the best sound.
I'm in agreement there.
You know, if I could take one sound with me to the grave, it would be that sound.
Ooh.
I don't even know what that means.
We'll take it at its face. That is the most beautiful, glorious sound that even as we're walking out, might as well.
You know, so like if you go to heaven, you know, they say, the angels, they all play harps. I'm like, I don't know. Maybe they play Wurlitzers.
Nice.
Which reminds me of my favorite Far Side, one of my favorite Far Side cartoons. So one panel is, you know, you're up in heaven. Welcome to heaven. They give you a harp. And the next panel is welcome to hell. And they're giving them accordions.
Oh. That's right? Hilarious.
We'll just add a panel. Welcome to heaven. Here's your Wurlitzer.
Yeah, maybe I should break out my accordion. I'll play a little accordion during this interview.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
No, it's probably not a good idea. I don't even know where my accordion is. You know what? I think I'm not kidding. I think I left it at my friend's house.
Probably with
you guys will have to settle for Jew's harp, for mouth harp then.
It's probably at your friend's house with the vinyl record for the Billy Preston record. They're probably both the accordion sitting right on top of the album, probably.
Jeffrey's story of my life.
Well, you know, Jeff, this is what can happen. We can call another time and he can play us the accordion, you know.
Yes.
All right. We'll do that. We'll have to do that. That would be fun. A little Skype party, Skype music party.
Yeah.
Do you know how many people would want to weasel in on that call?
Yes.
Oh my God, tell me about it. That would be too funny, actually.
We got to do that.
Yes, now we have, Mr. Kakavets has given us an idea.
I'm writing this down.
Honestly, I'm surprised that in this day and age that, you know, some people are doing like live stuff on Facebook, but I'm surprised like people aren't doing more like live, like broadcasts just from home, you know, but like to do it right, you know, sometimes you see a guy picking up his guitar, you know, he's got his phone there, then he plays a song, then the phone falls over halfway through, you know, it's like, but I think you could do it also with really good sound quality. You could do it with more players. You know, there's probably a way you could do like a multi-track recording, get it already mixed, you know, not that you're just picking up the sound through a mic on the computer. I think there's so much potential that hasn't been explored yet. Or maybe people are doing it and I just haven't been told about it.
Yeah, I love the idea.
So, now we know. Skype jam session with Chris Kakavets.
Yes.
I think it's got to happen.
It's gotta happen.
I don't play an instrument, but I can clap more or less in tune. So,
yeah, that'd be good. I mean, I'll tell you this much off the record: a lot of Germans can't clap on time. So, so usually you clap on the two, but the Germans always clap on the one. They're like one, two, three, four. They're like no.
My wife does that too, and she hits the one and the three every like right on, but it's always the one and the three. And I'm like, wait, what are you doing? You're doing the kick drum. Why are you doing the kick drum? You need to be doing the snare hit.
Yeah, but you know, maybe she's got German heritage. I don't know. But I'm telling you, like, or you're trying to do a song, and you know, and it's maybe kind of a. I got this one song called "Who's Your Whore." And it starts out like doo 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 doo, and then they'll start clapping along. Like right when I start the song, I'm like, "People, don't do that!" You know, it's like I'm trying to get. First of all, you're not in time, and you're clapping on the one.
Yeah, my son.
That's hilarious.
I'm just trying to picture that. On the one and the three. And
yeah.
It doesn't come natural to me, but
no.
A song, you know, it's ridiculous. I have to forgive my audience. I mean, they did pay to come see me after all, so it's like, all right, do what you guys want.
Yeah, exactly.
Just have fun. If you're having fun, then it's all good.
Exactly.
Don't fight me.
Yeah.
You know, you're basically fucking up this thing. You know, I'm trying to do my song. I don't know where the one is. Well, you're trying to show me because you're only clapping on the one. But all right, just, you know, you people have fun.
Wow. Have you happened to see that thing where, what's his name? Harry Connick Jr., he's playing a set and people are doing that. And he throws in an extra note and then he switches up the rhythm. So he's now playing what they're playing rather than what he was doing. And he does it.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah. It's interesting. Cause he just throws in an extra note. Right. So I think it might be a 4/4 song, but he does 5/4 on one beat and then just goes right back to
that's
it.
That's pretty clever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Eventually get them around to it. As you can tell, we had a lot of sidetrack shenanigans and our call went twice as long as we had planned. So, we decided to divide this episode into two parts. And therefore, this concludes part one. Tune in next week for part two.
So much potential, it's green on red. It's so true. So behind ourselves, there's so much potential. What happened? Green on red. Truth is here. Green on red. The end is here. Days go by. You're all the same. Stood still. So much potential. It's so sad. The screen on the red. Nothing happened the way we planned. Green on the red. The truth is here. So scared, days go by, nothing changes, we're still the same, so much potential.